Start your day with Morning Edition and wind it down with All Things Considered, only on KPBS. From global headlines to local stories, stay informed, inspired, and connected. Tune in daily or listen anytime at kpbs.org.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. On today's show, we'll talk with UT reporter Kelly Davis about her recent reporting on a lawsuit against two healthcare providers for county jails after the violent death of an inmate. This is KPBS Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. San Diego County is suing two of its jail healthcare providers following the violent killing of Brandon Yates inside the San Diego Central Jail. The lawsuit claims the man who killed Yates did not receive adequate mental health care. Kelly Davis joins me to discuss her latest reporting on this case. She's an investigative reporter with the Watchdog team at the San Diego Union Tribune. Kelly, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure. So, Kelly, what are the details in this lawsuit against the jail's healthcare provider?
Yes, so as you mentioned, the Yates family had filed a lawsuit against the county over the death of their son, Brandon. They filed that earlier this year. And so last week, the county filed what's called a cross-claim, which is basically kind of its own lawsuit, claiming that its medical provider, medical contractor, NAFCARE, and a subcontractor called Liberty Healthcare violated their contracts by not providing adequate mental health care to a man named Alvin Ruiz, who killed Brandon Yates in a jail cell in January 2024. And important to note that the county's claim, it doesn't say that the allegation in the Yates family's lawsuit is true. You know, it's very carefully worded. So it doesn't say that the claims the Yates family is making are true, but argues that if the county is found liable, it's actually the contractors who should pay the damages.
Well, you know, remind us what happened to Brandon Yates. I mean, what do we know about what transpired in that cell and why he got there?
Yeah, so Brandon, he was 24. He was arrested after he was found sleeping in someone's backyard shed. He was homeless at the time. His family said he struggled with addiction, mental illness. They had really tried to get him help. He had been an apprentice to a commercial fisherman, was really trying to get his life together. You know, just his family described him as this very, very kind person, just really motivated to try to pull his life together. And like I've heard from so many parents, his mom thought he'd be safer in jail than on the street. And maybe this could be the chance for him to finally get some help. But not long after he was booked, he was placed in the cell with Mr. Ruiz. Within just a few hours, the two men, you know, Brandon was off his meds. He was psychotic. Mr. Reese was psychotic. They both had kind of delusions about religion and started arguing about that. And that triggered a very violent fight where Mr. Reese was really the aggressor and just brutally murdered Brandon. It's very disturbing what all happened.
Well, what do we know about Alvin Ruiz, the man who killed Yates?
So he had been arrested in December 2023, so about a month and a half or a month or so before he killed Brandon. And he had been arrested after assaulting his wife and children. He also had a history, a very well-documented history of mental illness. And so when he was booked into jail, he had threatened suicide. He'd been placed in like high observation housing. He had violent outbursts. He had, you know, exhibited signs of acute psychosis, threatened to harm other people. And the county's claim against its contractors is that there were all these red flags, these mental health clinicians who had assessed Mr. Ruiz, but failed to put him into the jail's psychiatric stabilization unit, failed to ask a judge or to initiate the process of asking a judge that Mr. Ruiz could be involuntarily medicated, and that they didn't alert custody staff that Mr. Rees posed a serious risk to others.
Can you talk about why Yates was put in a cell with Ruiz?
That's the big question in the Yates family's lawsuit. So the county is kind of putting it on its contractors, you know, saying that the medical clinicians should have flagged him as a threat. But according to records obtained by the Yates family's attorney, jail deputies, the ones who are responsible for classifying people and determining, you know, what cells they're placed in, what part of the jail they're placed in, they knew Mr. Ruiz was dangerous. He had been classified by jail housing deputies as both, he had two like classifications, one called bypass, where he was supposed to be kept away from other people. He could not be in the a jail module day room with other people because he posed too much of a threat. And he was also classified as keep separate, meaning he should not have been housed with others. And according to Sheriff's Department's policy, the deputies who moved Brandon Yates into Alvin Ruiz's cell, they would have had to confirm that it was safe to put Brandon in that cell. So the family's saying, like, yes, you know, the contractor or the medical provider should have done a better job at assessing Mr. Ruiz, but jail deputies already knew that he was a threat. And then they go on to argue that once Mr. Ruiz started attacking Brandon, Brandon was hitting the emergency call button in his cell. Other people were hitting the emergency call buttons in their cells because they heard this fight going on, and no one came. Mm.
I know that the details of this are absolutely horrendous, but would you mind explaining what happened when the two were put in the jail cell together?
Well, they both kind of had delusions about religion. I mean, that was kind of how their mental illness manifested itself, and so they started arguing about religion, and mysteries who was very upfront with investigators on why, you know, what motivated him. He believed that Brandon was the devil and that God had told him to murder Brandon. And the way he did it is just horrific, just suffocating him. And when he realized Brandon was still alive, did it again, forced like soap down his throat, put a blanket over his face, and then staged, after Brandon was dead, kind of staged Brandon's body to make it look like a crucifixion almost. And his reasoning for doing that is he said he wanted to show that Brandon didn't kill himself, that this was his work, that he did this to show that he was responsible for killing Brandon.
The whole situation and the claims are horrific. Where is Ruiz now?
He's in the George Bailey Detention Facility, which is the county's high security jail. He's been charged with Brandon's murder. There is a long list of other charges he has accumulated in jail for different violent events other than what happened with Brandon. And then the charges he was facing for harming his wife and children. I'm not exactly sure where they are in the case, but I noticed there's a hearing coming up at the end of October, where I think they're going to kind of bring together all the charges and figure out where to go from there.
Hmm. Well, back to the county's lawsuit then against NAFCARE. What is the relationship between the county and that healthcare provider? How much do they pay to even contract them?
Yeah, so NAFCARE is the largest medical provider for the county. There are smaller contractors, and I think at least one subcontractor, but NAFCARE handles the bulk of the healthcare services in the county's seven jails. And NAFCARE handles healthcare for jails around the U.S. And it's not hard to find other lawsuits filed against NAFCARE over jail deaths and injuries. And so the county's contract with NAFCARE was signed in 2022. It's good for 5 years, with the possibility of an additional 5 years beyond that. So the total for the 10-year block is about $620 million. So it comes out to about 60, $1 million a year. And I think there's been some contract amendments since then, but that's kind of the base, the base amount of about $60 million a year.
Is this the first time the county sued one of their own providers?
For NAVCARE, yes. And I didn't get into this in the story, but in 2019, the family of a woman named Colleen Garreau sued the county. Mrs. Garreau had suffered a debilitating stroke at the Las Colinas Women's Jail and was not provided immediate medical care, which just kind of exacerbated the damage the stroke caused. She ended up permanently disabled. She needs around-the-clock care. Her family filed the county. The county filed a claim against two of its other medical contractors at the time. But the county did end up paying a full settlement of $9.5 million to Ms. Garreau's family. And then each contractor paid its own settlement.
Well, in this case, what has the healthcare provider, NAVCARE, said about the claims?
They said that their employees did everything right. They stand behind their employees. They want to provide the best possible care for people in San Diego jails. They'll have a chance to, the contractors will have a chance to respond to the county's claim. But so far, just in a statement, NAVCARE says that its employees are professionals. They do their best, you know, and that's about it.
Well, you know, you've done a lot of reporting on this tragic trend of in-custody deaths in San Diego County jails. How does this case fit into that ongoing problem?
You know, you mentioned the larger trend, but within that, we have seen smaller trends. There were a spate of suicides over a number of years, 2014, 2015, 2016. The county brought in outside consultants. There were a lot of reports, lots of lawsuits, and we've seen suicides go down. Then there were a lot of drug overdoses, a lot of lawsuits. County's brought in, Narcan, the overdose medication, you know, to address that. Done better with drug screening. Overdoses have gone down. Then there were a spate of homicides, kind of leading up to Brandon's death. There were seven over a period of 3 years. Brandon's, I believe, was the last homicide we've seen since then, if I'm remembering correctly. But there have still been some serious cases since then. And I looked at my notes before our interview today, and there are 16 or 17 pending lawsuits just over jail deaths, and then a larger class action suit over conditions and the provisions of healthcare and mental health care in San Diego jails. So it's a lot. Yeah.
I know that there was a proposal on the table for the Citizens Review Board to be able to investigate healthcare providers after an inmate death. How do you see that, their ability to be able to do that, impacting situations like these?
I think it'll be good, you know, for outside investigators to take their own look at whether policies were followed. And what was interesting is the Law Enforcement Review Board only recently got that power, the authority to investigate jail deaths. Before that vote by the County Board of Supervisors happened, the Sheriff's Department, the sheriff herself warned, if you give CLRB, the Law Enforcement Review Board, if you give them this authority, NAVCARE might pull out of its contract because they don't like this. They don't want this extra oversight. They don't want people kind of meddling in their, you know, what they do. And so I circled back to the Sheriff's Department. I said, hey, you know, Sheriff Martinez said NAVCARE might end its contract because of this additional oversight. Like, how are things going now that NAVCARE is being, you know, countersued by the county? Like, that seems like a much bigger issue. And they said they can't comment because it's pending litigation.
Very interesting. And I know it's something you'll continue to follow. I've been speaking with Kelly Davis. She is an investigative reporter on the watchdog team with the San Diego Union-Tribune. Kelly, as always, thank you for joining us and thank you for your reporting.
Thank you so much, Jane.
That's our show for today. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. Thanks for tuning in to Midday Edition. Be sure to have a great day on purpose, everyone.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the National Conflict Resolution Center. Geopolitics, a divisive election year, and strained budgets are all topics that can create tension in the workplace. NCRC can help workplace leaders navigate polarizing issues with the Culture, Communication, and Conflict Certificate. More at ncrconline.com.